coming to you from our new home at DynastyLeagueFootball.com and a DLF family of podcasts. We are the Superflex Super Show. We talk QB values, Superflex strategies, evaluate and debate Superflex trades, plus our own twist on Superflex team management with exercises like Tinderflex, Super 6, and You Are Nuts. So when you're done with this awesome DLF podcast, find us on Twitter at Superflex Show and join us in the discussion of the fastest growing format in all of fantasy football, Superflex, on the Superflex Super Show.
Yeah, so I'm editing this episode. I've just decided to take a section from the end and play it up front just to let you know where the thing went, because I found it hilarious. And yeah, we're just going to do that and then we're going to get to the interview. I don't have drops.
Later in this episode, Jeff Bell kills P.A. Howdy, basically.
This is me trying to own my chickens coming home to roost. Because to be fair, I'm very disappointed in this episode because I see Jeff's smiling face and all I see on Twitter is him making hilarious joke after hilarious joke. And I was like, I'll ask Jeff to come on because he's hilarious and that'll be funny. And you come on and you're giving realistic, interesting football analysis. What the fuck is with that, by the way? Not a single meme. Like, I was just here to have a few laughs. And so what's happening now is, because that's all I see on Twitter, I just am constantly troll tweeting you. Like, I make fun of what you say. I do one-liners. I'm constantly replying in aggressive troll form. And now you've come onto my podcast and like, I'm going to trash everything he loves. That's what you do. And it's not that it's not earned, Jeff. It's not that I don't deserve it. I get it. It's just, I'm just going to take it like a man. It's fine. You've earned this space. I've been too mean for too long. You're actually a professional analyst, and I've been just enjoying memes with you for too long. And so you're like, you know, Tyler Boyd sucks. You know what? You know what? You know what? There is no difference between Tyler Boyd and Van Jefferson. Just sit there and take that peek. Just eat it. Just eat it while I continue talking. You just pain, Jeff. Top to bottom. Like, well done.
Do you have the time to listen to me grind? Take down the film watchers and nerds all at once. I am one of those skeptical of status quo. Bayesian to the bone, no doubt about it. Sometimes I grind my Excel sheets. Sometimes pour cold water on heat. When the math's not adding up, you said I'm checking it out. I'm in the pile, working to the ground.
Yeah, for whom the bell tolls, is that right?
For whom J Bell tolls is
I didn't even notice. Nice. Yes, you personalized it. I like it.
I did personalize it. There's a level of wordplay going on there, so I consider myself a bit of a wordsmith. I don't know if it's a fantasy football renaissance man, but I like to write a little bit more than I like to do video content usually. So I like to play with words a little bit, and so that's kind of where that handle came from. So I enjoy it, but I do. It's one of those that I don't really notice other people's, and it is something that a lot of people notice about mine. So I'm grateful for that because I kind of the same way. I noticed the picture. I noticed the name of like what you're calling yourself on Twitter instead of what the actual handle is, because it, you know, there's two different levels there. You know, I dabble, like I knew the Matthew Berry's and like the big accounts and those that many people out there. And so it was one of those things that it was just something I thought of like a decade ago essentially, and just kind of randomly made that my name, not expecting anything to really come out of it. And then, you know, I get into it and everybody's like, oh, you got to have FF in your name. Like, who's going to find you? You don't have FF in your name. And it was like, nah, I'm cool. I'm all right. Like, you know, I'll be out here.
I'm too cool.
You can find me if you want to. If not, then if I don't have FF in my name and that doesn't mean that you find me, then I'm sorry.
But what do you do now, Jeff? Should probably just move that right along to something
Relevant.
You're at Football Guys. You're at the Devil Royale.
written content, doings, video content for Football Guys. And then the Debbie Royale is my, it's my baby. It's my brainchild. It's my podcast that we are almost coming up on a year running on it. So that is a podcast that we dive into Debbie. We do college football. I'm on there with Kevin Coleman at the boys underscore 22 and Christian Williams at C Williams NFL. Everybody kind of knows those guys on Twitter. They make themselves known all around, and they are, you know, almost like family at this point. I think anybody that's kind of had a long running podcast, you meet the same, see the same people every week, and you talk to them way more than that. So that is our show. So those are my primary two outlets, would be Tuesday nights at 9:30 on the Debbie Royale, and then all kinds of written content, whatever I can put up on Football Guys. If you've read my stuff, like, I don't like to do like the, I have little interest in writing a start this guy, sit that guy column. I think there's a lot more different ideas that can be explored and that can be more beneficial to a reader to build kind of toolbox out a little bit of how to look at situations. And I like to look at football scheme and who's going to be using these situations or trends. Like, you know, I wrote an article at Fantasy Pros talking about how, so, and it's, this is kind of your world, because it's would be vacated targets a little bit, where so many people will look at like a Josh Palmer and say, well, if Mike Williams leaves, then he's going to be the guy. But I did a whole dive over like the last handful of years. And the reality of it is when you've got a guy that's a big part of the offense that leaves in free agency, either the team drafts a guy in almost the first round without fail, or they sign an equivalent player. They it's just like very rarely do players really ascend up the depth chart. And I think you've done a lot of work in that area as well. And so I just think that there are things like that, that in Dynasty can really benefit players, Dynasty players, to understand situations, to really look for, you know, kind of how to build your rosters out and those type of things.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about the Devi Royale because it seemed like a good segue into rookies, but now I'm actually more interested in that. So the live show and podcast sounds really cool, and listen to that. But what have you found personally? Like, you just mentioned the whole thing of what you found, but genuinely, do you have rules or particular signs or signals that you look for? Because I found similar things, a whole expectation of what players already on the team are going to do based on who has left largely seems to be overblown or inaccurate. It has no connection or correlation. It's not that it doesn't clearly have an effect if one player is no longer on the depth chart, but the players that are on the depth chart are what matter. Just splurge. Like, what do you how do you go about, what's the process of figuring out a situation, what's important to look at?
So the deep dive that I did, like, I looked at contracts that were signed in free agency for the guys that were leaving. And I said that if this guy has earned a lot of money with his new team, clearly his performance has necessitated that raise. And the reality of it is that impact was so big on the team that they are going to spend resources to make sure that that production is equaled within their success. And so it's so often that it seems like all the top, like, wide receivers that get signed for big money, the team just turns around and uses a first round draft pick to replace that guy. It's like almost a one for one situation. If not, they might go down the ladder a little bit. But I think the reality of it is when the NFL teams look at money in those type of terms, they're just going to be sign their own guy. You know, it's if I have to spend 5, 10, 15% more to keep Chris Godwin versus bringing in Juju Smith-Schuster to try to be Chris Godwin, well, I know and I'm comfortable with Chris Godwin, so I'll go ahead and give him that money. Whereas if he is going to leave, it does seem like, especially the way that the draft is structured after free agency, that hole has been created in the team, and they're not just going to play the guys that are there. And I think that that's where the fallacy comes in so many times with dynasty players, is assuming that I've got this chip and he's going to move up. Then I'm going to get Tyler Johnson's going to be Chris Godwin and I'm going to win. And no, Chris Godwin's incredibly important to the Buccaneers, and the Buccaneers are going to spend resources to make sure that Chris Godwin is being replaced. If they were comfortable with Tyler Johnson being that guy, Tyler Johnson would already be that guy. Now, I do think that there is efficiencies in the market that can be used to do that. You can hold your Josh Palmer right now or hold your Tyler Johnson. And the moment that Chris Godwin does leave, trade them for a draft pick, because that is how you play the game. That is how you play the game of dynasty football.
I think that's an interesting phrase, because you can play this game and various aspects of it a number of different ways. And I always advocate for leaning the direction you enjoy or you find the most success, because you could just be different at different elements of the game. John Bosch, he's a value hawk. His mind works that way. Whereas some people like Travis May from RotoViz, he is an excellent scout. He does well at evaluating talent. And so they just lean into those aspects. And I find that interesting. But also, speaking specifically of vacated situations or these situations we have to read, I think your way of approaching it that you were just talking about, that part of it at least, is interesting, because there are two elements to it, right? There's what the team wants to do, and also what the players are capable of. There's a talent quotient of it. So intention is important, and I think with contract information and who they sign and don't sign, like much like with vacated targets, that is a number. I think it's an indicator stat. I think it's telling you something about what the team is trying to do, and from there you've got to, one, guess their intention, write about their intention, obviously, but then you have to hope that they are able to follow through their intention, which brings us to the second part of that type of problem, that situation, which is what players are going to do regardless of what anyone else intends. And there is a talent portion to football, obviously. In the NFL, everyone's extremely talented. Do you do anything with that aspect of it? Because like John Bosch would be like, I don't care. Value, youth, positional, I can do stuff with all of that. As far as evaluating talent, I don't have to be a great scout to be an excellent dynasty player, which he doesn't. He's an excellent dynasty player, and I don't think he does player evaluation. Whereas Travis May and other people go the other route with it and try to do both. Do you have anything you do for these kind of complicated situations, for that aspect of it? Contracts are a great way to try and guess and get an inclination onto the team's intention. But do you ever like look at Tyler Johnson and or Chris Godwin or whoever else is on the depth chart and say, this player is showing signs that they could earn more targets, no matter what the team's intending?
Well, so being in the Devy space, there's certainly a level of scouting that goes on with it. I like to try to use all of it, and I need to learn more on the analytical side. But I look at it as somebody that has loved and watched football for 30 years, the last 30 years. And I watch a lot of football. And so I guess you would arguably say that I'd be on the tape side, but I do love to play into a narrative and look at narratives too. And so I know that that's a dirty word around these parts. It's really just the whole package, how you look into it. And reality is a lot of it's scheme based, because I think that some people have this grand idea that a quarterback is standing back there like a statue, scanning the field and picking out the best target, whoever is able to get the most open. But the reality is you watch these offenses and you count to 3 seconds, 5 seconds, the ball's got to be out of the hand. So many of these targets and everything are schemed up, and offenses, they're going, you watch the Chiefs and yeah, sure, Byron Pringle might score a random touchdown. And if you're the type of person that you're just looking purely at, well, he had 13 fantasy points, then okay, great. But if you're watching what's happening, you're watching the volume and you're watching the plays that are happening, they're getting the ball to Tyreek Hill and they're getting the ball to Travis Kelce. And that's what they're trying to do within their offense. And so when it comes to players that can potentially step up and do those roles, I think one of the biggest fallacies that you see in the fantasy space would be, let's use Jalen Guyton, for example. So Jalen Guyton was on the field a lot, especially 2 years ago. He was on the field a lot for the Chargers, but Jalen Guyton's job on the field was to run straight downfield, take a defender with him, and essentially what he was a fullback. His job was to remove a defender from the play, whereas they're trying to get the ball to Keenan Allen and to Mike Williams. And I think that there's a level of fantasy analysis that says, well, Jalen Guyton had all the snaps, and if somebody were to get hurt, then surely they're just going to throw the ball to him. but the reality of it is he's doing his job, and he's doing his job, and he's not getting those targets for a reason. So if somebody were to get hurt, then it's very likely Jalen Guyton's going to keep doing Jalen Guyton's job, and somebody else is going to be getting those things, whoever can fit into that profile of what that team's trying to do, where that team's trying to get the ball within their offense.
Like, how does that work with different types of situations? Like, Amon-Ra St. Brown, you don't have a lot of contracts to deal with because the fact is they just vacated all of the targets, all of the contracts, sorry. But Amon-Ra St. Brown averages like 50 targets a game over the last five games, has a pretty solid rookie season for a player drafted outside the first three rounds, if memory calls. Like, how do you approach a situation like that for what might happen going forward?
Yeah, I am of the belief that, you know, some of it certainly came when DeAndre Swift and TJ Hockenson were out of the lineup. But I think that the Lions are going to continue to add talent and add more receivers around. And, you know, we saw what he could do on the field. Certainly, so he's capable of producing, but do they really want to structure their offense around him doing that? And you know, certainly maybe he's Cooper Kupp 2.0, and maybe that possibility
was that exists. Sorry, I don't mean to interrupt your flow there, but like when you say Cooper Kupp 2.0, do you mean that's how he plays, or that's the role he was going to play, or
you wouldn't, I think that there are, it's not a direct comparison, but you know, Brett Holmes
comparison. Okay,
well but Brett Holmes coming over from the Rams, and certainly there's I think that you know, he made that draft pick, and I think that they're probably looking for similarities in what a guy is able to do for leaving the situation that was very successful that allowed him to become the new GM. And so that's would be the only reason why I would bring that name in. Because, you know, there's ties between the organizations, with the GM coming over from the Rams, their success for a later drafted wide receiver to have that fantasy role. And I think there are probably some things within their usage, the way that they are used on the field, their athletic profiles, I think probably would be beneficially stacked up to each other. You know, neither one of these are a 6'4" guy that's running downfield and catching the ball over guys, or neither one of them is a 5'8" gadget guy that, or like a Tyreek Hill that's able to do a little bit of both. You know, they're winning in the similar areas of the field. But I do think that the Lions are on talent acquisition stage, as opposed to they kind of cleared their talent teardown stage, and you know,
right.
Franchises are cyclical in terms of a new GM comes in, they move some pieces around, they clear some things out, clear some contracts out, and then they start to build pieces. And so my concern on St. Brown moving forward, I look at the market, and reality of it is probably the person that values him the most in your league already has him on their roster, so to acquire him is going to be near impossible. I just think that there are other pivots that I feel comfortable at his market to be able
I don't think there's a value weakness in it, like, but reading the situation, I mean, my main takeaway is not every player in that situation is able to fill that role as well as Amon-Ra St. So I'm fine ticking the, you know, he's probably good box. But I think it's fair to have concern because of his low draft status and because it's going to be trying to build this team. There's risk there. And so you don't write him off as he only has targets because there's no one else there. But at the same time, you don't think, therefore, he's Cooper Kupp. And you weren't making that comparison. I just thought it was an interesting name to come up. And so I wanted to kind of clear up how it came up, whether it's just the role or more the style of play. And if it's just a role, I think that makes sense as well.
Yeah, I'm the type that I try to look at for relationships in everything that, and especially when it comes to the football, and just kind of this guy has coached together, or like you're the GM came from this other situation, and so he saw it done one way, and so that's kind of that's where I land kind of there on I think there are similarities that would be very encouraging. Now before this year, I don't think people were that bullish on Cooper Kupp. You know, it's one of those things that he was probably a hell of a value for anybody that was willing to go in and buy it, obviously, the way that he performed. It's also one of these things, I'm the type that we saw Amon-Ra St. Brown do that on the field.
Exactly, and, yeah.
You know, we saw him produce at those levels. And now certainly defenses moving forward would be more akin to removing him from those situations. And I think a lot of times we see early success with players. Defenses, it's one of these that I think about it in baseball terms of, if you're a guy that you have mashed fastballs throughout the minor leagues and you get up to the major leagues and, you know, your first however many at bats, you're still mashing fastballs. And then they decide, well, we're only going to throw you curveballs now, and you can't hit curveballs. And I think that there's a certain level of that in young football players, that defenses will go one way and maybe the guy's not on the game plan. He produces, and then he becomes on the game plan and he doesn't produce anymore.
What the hell is baseball? But so how do you go about reading that into rookie analysis, like rookies going to good or bad situations?
Yeah, I think there's a level of reading too much in, maybe, but I think draft capital is essentially landing spot more than like teams. Like, and if a team is willing to use a first round pick on a player, that says something about A, they believe in the player, but B, that says something about the rest of their roster. And so you look at a player like Jonathan Taylor, and everybody said that that's a Taylor landing spot. But I think everybody said that because Marlon Mack was a productive fantasy player. But when the Colts look at it from real football, they probably saw that there are very real limitations to Marlon Mack's game, that we need to go out and get a much better player. And so they made him the guy. And I think too, the other fallacy that people run into is they can say that maybe like Treylon Burks going to the Browns is a bad landing spot because, well, they haven't got a production out of wide receivers, and but they haven't had Treylon Burks there. They haven't had a player that is able to bring it up a level. You know, AJ going way back when, Andre Johnson landing with like the expansion Texans could have been a bad landing spot because David Carr can't even get the ball out. But the reality of it is they just had he brought their offense up a level. And so guys that are that good, I think too much certainly gets right into landing spot, because if the guy's that talented and if the team believes in him that much that they use that high first round draft capital on him, then that's going to alter our perceived landing spots for everything.
It would be fair to say you think players matter more when you're trying to evaluate what a rookie is going to do than a team situation then? You can say no. It's okay.
You know, I'm just trying to get a sense. Well, I mean, I land in the middle there because we're dealing
normally
with
the safest place. That's fair.
Well, but the reality is we're dealing with a finite pool of potential points. We're dealing with in a team that is able to score 500 points on a season versus a team that's able to score 300 points on the season. We're talking about two entirely different conversations on that level of potential points. And now scenario A, the high scoring team might have more conflict for production than scenario B. But I think that if you play fantasy for long enough, grabbing players on good, well-run teams usually tends to work out for you more often than not. And so certainly you can get in situations where maybe like an Elijah Moore comes in and there's just nobody there and they force him the ball and that looks great for fantasy. But it raises two questions, because it raises one, is that his true skill profile, and or two, will he continue to do that as the team builds more talent around him? Whereas a guy, I don't know, I would think you'd feel more comfortable drafting a player that lands with a good team, a well-run team. One, you trust that team's usage of that player, that they're going to put him in good situations, because I think we've seen other rookies that we believe are talented that either they don't get the ball or whatever reason happens. But two, I think that there's I think there's a level of, especially when you want to play, be amateur scout, you believe your own abilities, but the reality of it is the Kansas City Chiefs do a better job of finding talented players than Jeff Bell does. And that's just the situation of it is.
I don't know that's true, Jeff. I don't know that's true.
You know, or like the Buffalo Bills currently are probably doing a better job of finding talented players than Jeff Bell is. And so
now they're doing even worse. You
know, but maybe the Jacksonville Jaguars, I don't know. You know, maybe Jeff Bell can find better players than the Jacksonville Jaguars. I think that there's certainly some merit of conversation that needs to go into that.
Side question. Did they make you wear a little suit for your little picture here on Fantasy Pros, by the way?
My picture on the website?
Yeah.
That's
so professional. So, it's not right.
That's from my professional life, and I just needed a picture to post up there. So I don't know.
I wonder where those pictures come from. It's like I've only got three pictures of myself, I guess.
I got my picture of myself in a suit. I should probably post it up here, I guess, and look professional on this Fantasy Pro site. I don't know.
It looks good. I was just wondering.
Peter. Like my Twitter thing is black and white because it was like I looked at myself and I was like, I don't want to look at myself all day long. Well, if I make it black and white, then at least like not me that I'm seeing in the mirror.
At least it looks autistic, right? No, I'm the same. Like every time I write an article for a different website, they're like, do you have a picture? I'm like, no, I've got like three pictures of myself. One, I'm 12 years old. The other one, I'm sitting by a stream because my wife took it. And the other one, I it's blurry. You don't want that. It's a screenshot from a video I did once. And so every time they ask, there's just this picture of me sitting by a stream. I'm not particularly big outdoorsman or nothing. I'm not like Pete goes near stream.
And then you go on every show and people say, do you like sitting by streams, Peter?
Exactly. Do you wear suits all the time, Jeff? Is that what you're saying with this picture? No. Sorry. It's good me. So that leads very naturally into my question. Is 2022 a bad class?
So I think there is no Ja'Marr Chase. There is no Kyle Pitts. There is no guy that you feel comfortable pounding the table on. I think so in that regard, I think that you can say that it's a bad class because there's no guys that we feel immediately are going to be generational type talents. But at the same time, I think when I look at last year's class and this year's class, I still kind of drop off at the same point. Like I want an early second round pick with this year's class. Like I wanted an early second round pick with last year's class. And so I think that in terms of that, like I'm still comfortable. Like I've done some mocks recently. Like I'm still comfortable grabbing, if McBride is there in at the 203 or 204, or if Pickens is, or a guy like that, you know, I'm equally comfortable grabbing them as some of the guys that were sitting in that range last year. So in that regard, I think that there's been a lot said about this class falling out off. Every class falls off like at like 109 ish and like 204 ish. There's still breaking points in every class. I think that where a lot of the talk about this class being a bad class comes like the not having the Ja'Marr Chase in it. And then I think you look at next year's class and there's arguably 4, 5, 6 guys that are like the Ja'Marr Chase. But at the same time, I think that you can still reap a tremendous amount of value from your all the way through to your early second round picks.
Yeah, I think this is one of the areas where I try and step back and go, I don't know, I'm not an NFL team, right? And try and apply that level of logic. And the one thing that strikes me about the bad class narrative is I can't find a class without a rookie class without a Ja'Marr level Chase fantasy producer in it. Like, there are always guy must draft or must want or top tier. Like, yeah, there's not a Ja'Marr Chase in every class or an Odell Beckham, but we've had Keenan Allens and DeAndre Hopkins and Tyreek Hills, who was undrafted, which is also an aspect of this. Some of those turn out to be players we didn't expect, right? That were more risky, that we if we drafted, we drafted fairly low. So saying there's always a good player comes with that caveat of we might know who he is. And I think that's what 2022, I keep saying like 22 seven times whenever I try and say this year, it's going to be a problem. I think what it is it's harder to distinguish. And I think that's what you're saying, with there's no Ja'Marr Chase of everyone's got locked in at one at wide receiver and we know it. I think they're actually, we think we're going to be wrong on it a lot. And there are good players here, but they might be drafted in the second round, or they might end up being fourth round picks, or you might get a Nikhil or Harry or a Corey Davis or a Trent Richardson, a high drafted player who usually a lot more secure in the first three picks than the top 12 picks or the top 24 picks for that matter. But this class, like some classes we've seen before, and there are good players here, but we might get them a little bit more wrong. And where 2021 feels so good, because there weren't so many good players so far, but we got them mostly right.
I think Ja'Marr Chase was, I don't know, maybe it's just me, but I feel like that was more certain than most, I guess,
okay,
when I see it, because, you know, that's a guy that immediately exploded on as a freshman on a national championship team. So he's high profile and keeps good. I mean, and was playing with Justin Jefferson on the same field, and he was as good or if not better than Justin Jefferson on the same field. So you see things like that. I think that's kind of where it catapults it. I can get there, you know, with Treylon Burks, and I feel comfortable there. I think Garrett Wilson is a very special player that I think it wouldn't shock me if in a year either of them are considered dynasty wide receiver ones. That wouldn't not shock me at all. And even I think Malik Willis, you know, I think in a year, if he's a starting quarterback somewhere, his profile, his athleticism, he's going to put up fantasy points. And so if he's viewed as a dynasty quarterback one, the top 12 quarterback in a year, I don't think anybody should be overly shocked, because he's got the tools to do it. I do think that where a lot of the narrative on the weak class comes in, it bubbles up because Twitter and like the Devy space, I think a lot of it is the excitement over next year's class. And next year's class is a very exciting class. I think that the narrative on the draft class kind of gets driven from that group of people that carry it into Twitter, that kind of spread that out like that. And then as the NFL draft actually ramps up, that's kind of where the rookie fever season comes in. Like once you're inundated, and if you're the type that you're consuming a lot of media and you're watching it, and once NFL Network and ESPN starts really talking about the rookies, like that's where the rookie fever gets bred up. And I expect that we're going to get rookie fever again this year, and people are going to feel in 3 months will probably feel very different than they feel about picks right now. Kind of where I feel with the class is I've been trying to move those picks, and like I did a trade a couple weeks ago where I traded a 211 into a 201, and so, or like a, you know, like a 312 as part of a package into a 201, and so people have that perception on this class being weak, but you are exactly right. There are players that are going to be fantasy stars in this class. There are.
Good. No, I got something right every now and again, to be honest. I appreciate that.
Right all the time.
And yeah, with Treylon Burks, just going to keep on my narrative here. Like, is there anything missing in particular? I'm not saying you're saying there's a problem, or is there anything that shines in particular? Is there something other than playing with Justin Jefferson on the same team that would make you feel more confident with him? Because honestly, I'm just looking at charts and a graph at one point, so I have real no sense of it. And just open to the idea of the, do you think he's getting numbers, but he's not having to work for it too hard because he's not on that national whatever it was team that you said? Or is there anything that I might not know, just because I don't watch Devy and I'm not investing in college and I don't know really what I'm watching when I enjoy watching football? So what might you miss on Treylon Burks, good or bad?
I don't know. It's one of these things that the draft community is distanced from the Twitter community when it comes to Treylon Burks. And like, I've seen like people in the draft community that have him as their wide receiver four. And I think that there's a lot of concern coming from there a lot of his production, Arkansas did a lot of things where they stack him into like a bubble screen where they would protect him from the line of scrimmage, get him the ball in his hands, have blockers in front of him and let him run that way. Or like there'd be a lot of straight down the field type stuff. Comparison that I've seen is DK Metcalf thrown around where DK Metcalf can win and he can give us fantasy points, but only in like a certain style. And I think that where a lot of people with Treylon Burks want to bring that to that overall just stud AJ Johnson or Andre Johnson type that we think about it. Or I've seen people say he's TO and like those type of things. And I think that's aggressive to really get there.
What do you mean by that though? Like obviously TO is a very high standard of production. And that's what occurs to me when you say that's a bit, but do you mean literally the way he plays is hard to do and Burks doesn't do that? Or is a
Burks is not a player that wins on every route on the route tree, essentially.
Oh, okay. He's good, but he's not excelling in every facet the way someone like TO did. Okay.
Where somebody like Ja'Marr Chase could potentially excel in, went on multiple different types of routes. And so that's kind of where that kind of comes in a little bit. But, you know, everybody's on the hunt for the next Debo. And I do think that some of what Arkansas used Burks in that I think that there's some of that in his game that if he lands in the right situation, that would be willing to use him in that type of situation. I think he could do those type of things. And clearly that works very well for fantasy production.
I forget how important team is to the NFL or analysts that know Devi and know the college space, where they're just names to me mostly. I mean, I know the name Alabama and the SEC, obviously, but like, I forget that Arkansas is such a different thing for someone who watches and knows these places. Like, yeah, you're doing it at Arkansas though. And that's important. I'm trying to ask these questions because what I've learned about myself is despite trying not to, I often ask a question in a way that gets me something like the answer I want, like the answers in the question. I'm always looking for a reason not to draft a player. That's kind of what my default is. I'm looking for traps. Let me know if you're trying to say something different on Burks, but I think you're saying that he just doesn't excel as well as someone like Ja'Marr Chase or presumably top tier prospects from previous classes. He's good, but we didn't see him in the best of all possible competition levels. And so there's more questions around what he can do in the NFL. Is that fair?
I think that's probably a fair assessment on it. It's not one of these things that he checked every box, essentially. You know, he checks a lot of boxes. And I think that there's certainly reason to buy into it. And I think that he's going to get everything that we want to see. He's going to be a first round draft pick. He's obviously big. He's strong, fast. He can do those things. And that's what you're looking for in a wide receiver. And, you know, we're talking about being potentially the 101 or the 102 or three, that whatever it might be. And I think it's, I don't have any case to not take him in those areas. I would take him in those areas. You know, I like Garrett Wilson's a guy that I like a lot. And I think that there's a lot. Quickness really matters in the NFL kind of more than speed does. And so I think that there's some things that projectably the way that Garrett Wilson is able to use quickness, way able to work, line up in different formations and run different routes, that's kind of where I end up nudging him slightly ahead of Treylon Burks. Think both guys are they're good. They're very good prospects. But it's
spoken to who was it? Nathan Hamilton recently, and he was saying his takeaway from Chase is that he needed a great landing spot because the things he does well, he needed a quarterback that was willing to not be brave enough, but be willing to give him that trust, because you throw it to Ja'Marr Chase and he does stuff. I don't know tape, but essentially that seemed to be Nate's feeling on it, that you have to just throw it that way and Chase is good enough. And he needed a quarterback who would, and Burrow obviously is that guy because he did it in college as well. And so it's not that, I'm not counterposing your opinions and saying, see, he wasn't that great. And no, that's what I struggle with tape. I don't have an evaluation, and great eyes who have you and Nate both are great. And you have such different takeaways. And so sometimes it's just good.
No, the concern on Chase was that when you watch him, so Chase was a late separator. And what I mean by that is that he's not one of these guys that wins right away and he's wide open and let's get in the ball. He's a guy that he and the way he plays, we see it at the NFL level. He's comfortable if the defensive back is on his hip pocket, but when that ball comes, he's going to win the ball. And I
think I understand what you mean there. He can, he can just turn it on when he wants. He doesn't have to do it in advance.
Yes. Okay. Is, or like he can create that separation quickly in, and so, and Burks has some of that in his game. I think that there's certainly some of that in Treylon Burks' game. But it's just not,
and obviously we're not comparing the two because of any particular reason other than I named
other
them,
than one
fair,
came in one player. Year and one came in another year.
Yeah, exactly. Right. We're not just to not lay that comparison at your doorstep. Yeah. I don't want to make you feel uncomfortable with it. Like I'm not yeah, I get it. I want to ask you about each and every player, but you've been here for like an hour. I got to cut it down to 30 minutes. And honestly, if you want to, and you should want to hear what more of what Jeff has to say about prospects, he's like works for Fantasy Pros or someone, Football Guys, one or the other. We didn't clear it up very well, so you can check him out at Football Guys or his regular podcast. He's got a Devi live show and a podcast, and you definitely should because he's really interesting to talk about on these prayers. And I should probably move on so we don't end up here till 3 a.m. So I love the diamond and the rough, and two of the ones that stick out to me, David Bell really does for different reasons, but I think people are going to like him more than I'm describing. But Wandale Robinson, I think, is really interesting just because of the, and as you no doubt know, he's taken a slightly different career path. Have you watched him, or do you have anything you want to add on Wandale Robinson, the Nebraska running back who's playing wide receiver?
Does height matter to you? Peter, thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure.
It's fine, Jeff. You don't have to pretend. That's fine. You go what you want.
It has been a true pleasure, and I'm so grateful and thankful that you reached out to me. And I'm sorry if I am a little bit more serious when I'm on video than when I'm
screwing
around dropping one-liners on Twitter.
And you're happy about that fact. Let's not pretend. Anyone else you want to talk about, mention, shout out, a podcast you want to tell my three listeners to? Because, you know, three viewers are three viewers, man. They're pretty loyal. They're good people. Let them know.
Yeah, I'm sure they're very good people. I've met some of your people. They are very good people. Yeah, Phil, gosh, I don't know his last name off the top of my head, but he won my safe league and he joined in a league that I'm in, and I know he's on your Patreon and he's a good guy and I'd love to say hi to him. I should know his last name if I'm gonna say hi to him, but you know, Phil's a good guy, so I'll make sure to point that out. But no, you can find me Debbie Royale at 9:30 on Tuesday nights, and then written content, video content with Football Guys, and then I also screw around with my friends on 7 o'clock on Tuesday nights on Coming Off the Edge. So we like to have fun over there. We don't do anything very seriously at all.
Yeah. Chicken or crow, crossing the road, go. Clicking a poll, Twitter is gold, player unfolds, so. Jake on the table going Nate on the place, no. Pete enumerates the plays, they're analytical. Picking my nose, don't really know if I like that. Picking their brains, got different lanes, but I like that. Picking these guys, all of these times, all of these nice stats. Picking apart, the film is an art, always a fight. Back and forth, there is no order, they disorder more and more. Because the players ain't no older, they some hoarders or some mortars. Dropping bombs without no borders, Jake got that I like Mordor. Peak grinding numbers like molars, I don't know anymore. I am at a crossroads. Chicken or crow, crossing the road. Go, clicking a poll, Twitter is gold, player unfold, so Jake on the table and Nate on the plays, though. Pete enumerates the plays, they're analytical. Chicken or crow, crossing the road, go, clicking a poll, Twitter is gold, player unfold, so Jake on the table and Nate on the plays, though. Pete enumerates the plays, they're analytical.
Hey, so after edit, Pete, for the degenerates who stay for the entire outro, I guess. Little nervous. I tried to edit this so it was funny, but like I really had a good time talking to Jeff, and he did some great rookie analysis after talking about Treylon Burks. But I found that height thing just a really good cutoff point, and we're past the 30-minute mark.
and the references to Tyler Boyd and Van Jefferson came up when he was doing some analysis of other players. That's where that reference came from, just to clear that up. And he was wonderful to talk to, and obviously a great analyst. And honestly, you should check him out if you haven't already, at For Whom the J-Bell Tolls on Twitter, and Football Guys, to hear more of what he says has to say about rookies. But I thought we'd covered enough topics for the episode, and this was a clean cutoff point that I found to be a fun little ending. That was great. I hope you enjoyed it. Thanks very much.
No, not a single meme.